top of the morning to ya. I'm Liam the Leprechaun, and I've got a wee secret to share. ZJZDesigns.com has just unveiled their brand new St. Patrick's Day apparel. Featuring yours truly, of course. From cheeky tees to lucky prints, these designs are brimming with charm and plenty of gold. Whether you're heading to a parade or just feeling the Irish spirit, you look grand in these threads. So what are you waiting for? Skip the rainbow and head straight to ZJZDesigns.com. You'll find the pot of gold in your cart. No magic required. ZJZDesigns.com. Where style is always in season.
The All About Nothing podcast may have language and content
that isn't appropriate for some.
Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome, Nothingers, to another episode of the All About Nothing podcast. This is episode number 243. I am Barrett Gruber. I am joined by Mr. Bill Fry, who, of course, you all know Bill because he was our intern last summer. And now he's jobless and needs something to do on a regular enough basis. You want to defend yourself, Bill? No?
No, I'm jobless. I am. I mean, not quite jobless. DoorDash helps a good bit.
DoorDash is a thing. Now, we'll get into a little bit of that. We'll get into that. Please subscribe and share the show. That's how we get new listeners. Also, if you could, please consider supporting the show financially by visiting theallaboutnothing.com and becoming an official member and probably calling yourself a true nothinger. We'll have more details on that at the end of the show. And if you can't do that, please give us a 5-star review, a like, or follow us across all of social media. You can find links to theallaboutnothing.com is where you can find links to all of that. Real quick, registration going on now through March 28th for the Everplay Masters of Putt-Putt at Frankie's Fun Park in Columbia, South Carolina on March 29th. That will probably also sell out. So visit everplaysocial.com. Real quick, also, check out ZJZ Designs for apparel, gifts, and more. New designs released regularly, including their latest designs for St. Patrick's Day featuring Liam the Leprechaun. It's a great design for any season. Check it out, ZJZDesigns.com. As well, if you're watching this right now, next weekend is the Coastal Comic Con in Wilmington, North Carolina at the Wilmington Convention Center. But if you're watching this regularly or you're listening to this regularly, the Comic Con is this weekend, next weekend. March 1st and 2nd, Wilmington Convention Center in Wilmington, North Carolina. You can check out CoastalComicCon.com for tickets and details. Vendors, artists, voiceover artists, including TV and movie actors, Ross Marquand, Sam Witwer, Matthew Wood, Matthew Watterson, Cal Dodd, and Caitlin Robruck are all going to be there. Visit CoastalComicCon.com or follow Coastal Comic Con on Instagram and Facebook for information. Tickets available now. Go do that. So, Bill Fry. What have you been up to?
Oh, man.
You graduated. Congratulations.
I graduated in December. And since then, I've kind of been taking it easy. I've been, like I said, been doing a lot of DoorDash, applying for jobs. I'm working on a couple of things I can't talk about yet. Maybe I'll tell you off camera later.
Okay.
So, secret.
But look, there's quite literally nothing to be embarrassed about having a robust porn career. There's nothing embarrassing about it.
No,
most of the states, well, you can get away with it as long as it's a New Jersey address.
Yeah. 2 months. 2 months out of college, it really did get to me. But
I was gonna say, this is the time to start. Do it now. Some of us are too old for that sort of thing. Graduate of the School of Journalism from the University of South Carolina. You did that back in December, and that's exciting. You're a step ahead of me.
Because I went through before I was graduated, I was working on Carolina News, which was the craziest thing. I mean, we put probably 50, 60 hours into that. I wasn't even, like, we were not paid everything we did, like all the gas, all the things we did, every bit of it. Travel, I mean, 9 to 5, and then even later, and then planning over the weekend for the next thing. That was also a wild program to be a part of. So,
Political Bill SC, who is my partner on the Kinda Daily Show, has made a comment. Apparently, he thinks that I am going to supply the music for your career. maybe.
Possible.
So
it's possible.
So one of the things that I'm thankful to have Bill here is because coming up at the end of March, as most of our regular listeners know, Zach is going to be on paternity leave because he and his wife are having twins, and his attention is going to be focused elsewhere and elsewhere. And in order to not go back to the episodes of this podcast where it was basically me just doing a running monologue for 20, 30, 40 minutes, we have been in the process of trying to find people that we could utilize as the co-host of this program, because ultimately it's still unpaid, Bill.
This is true.
but so essentially because Zach's going to be out, we're going to have some people stand in. Right now, the preference is that Bill do it because he is used to what goes on with this podcast and how little he probably gets to talk because I talk too much. So essentially Bill Fry is going to stand in as much as he can, hopefully all of it, but it's going to be a good time. I'm glad Bill's going to be back. It makes it easier on me too, because it's easier on me if everyone has the same name. So between you and Bill Kimmler and then Bill Fry, I can ultimately, it makes it easier on me because I can just start to call everybody Bill and get away with it. if you are on YouTube and you have any comments to make, please make them. We'll throw them up on the screen. Bill Kimmler wants to know, what celebrity impressions can you do?
Celebrity impressions?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's putting me on the spot immediately.
How's your Matthew McConaughey?
Oh, I don't have a Matthew McConaughey. Do you have
a Matthew McConaughey? No, he's not here currently. But if he were here, he'd say, all right, all right, all right. Anyway, all that's right, terrible. All right. And I promise I will never do that again. So you graduated from, University of South Carolina. You now have a journalism degree, broadcast journalism. Ultimately, what I meant to tell you before you started the whole process was, become a doctor or,
do anything or else.
Potentially something, anything other than podcast journalism, because you're gonna find a lot of disappointment. It happens. I can't tell you the number of the internships that I attempted. I had several successful internships that did turn into actual jobs. One of them being that I worked for a radio station in Atlanta, WKHX FM Kix 101.5, which was a country station. I worked for it for several years. That then moved over into hosting my own morning show on a very small AM radio station between Athens and Atlanta, called WIMO. That was a fun time. I worked for some very, very interesting people, I'll just say it was a very interesting, it was a good time. I enjoyed it. But I was also glad when I moved on from there, but it was a very small, it was a 1,000-watt radio station that before 5 o'clock in the morning, we would go, our transmitter, our antenna would go, we would be directional. And it just happened that the direction pointed pretty much east-west or mostly like, or maybe like east, northeast, and west, southwest. But we were pointed directly towards the UK. And I would get emails on the morning show from people listening in Scotland or in the UK, which was kind of interesting because I definitely encouraged them, don't call. Do not make that long distance call. Of course, now you can FaceTime and whatnot, which is fine. Makes it easier. But when we talked last week, or was it last week or the week before? I think it was the week before.
Maybe it was the week before the last episode. Maybe like, I'm going to say 9 to 10 days ago, something like that.
Yeah. It was right before we recorded with Ashley and Chris of the Neptune app, which again, if you haven't listened to that episode yet, go back and listen to it because Ashley and Chris were fantastic. Really look forward to seeing what comes out of the Neptune app, because as Bill and I were discussing before we started recording, we both have a sickness of TikTok currently.
Yeah.
Because I think, and I guess we could start it off with that. My biggest concern about TikTok is I don't know what it's going to be. The looming ban is going to kick back in, in like another 30 days or so. And, so at that point, it'll be the 60-day notice. Now, I know Donald Trump said, a week or so ago that he could just push, kick the can a little further down the road, but that isn't true. The ban only allowed for a 75 day ban if they use the 75 day ban, but under Trump, his decision was only a 60-day ban.
Yeah,
I guess kicking it down the road.
Yeah, the ban is literally just a bluff all the way until America owns a large portion of TikTok, which is going to be difficult. Also, the fact that any app is being... It's almost like people act like certain apps are safe. I was talking to my brother-in-law, who's a computer scientist, about a lot of this, and it's like a lot of apps, even like Blue Sky. Like, I started a Blue Sky account recently, which was like the former CEO of Twitter started it and then gave it to somebody, and they're just like, oh, we're not going to give it up or anything like that. But as long as there's like a private CEO over anything, I mean, they have a price tag. So yeah. I just like TikTok, even if America buys this thing, it's like there's going to be something else. I mean, it's going to be constant, which is why my brother-in-law is trying to like get people to just use Mastodon, because there's no like actual... I think the term is like, it's federated. So it's like, there's no single owner of it. And it's like a thread.
Okay.
That's interesting. So I've missed some of the stuff on the Neptune, interview that you did last week, but I'm curious to see, like, if they became billionaires, would they sell it? Would they sell it?
Well, as of right now, it sounds like when it comes to investors that they have not seeked out a lot of in the way of investment. They basically bootstrapped themselves for this app, meaning that they're paying for, the incidental cost of getting the app to market. And so there have been, it sounded like there have been some conversations about potentially doing investors and that sort of thing. But see, with investments, there's a responsibility to those investors that you really have to make. And sometimes that includes selling your soul. It includes, giving up portions of the app that you think are important to you that they potentially want. Like, legacy software pieces that would be in addition to it that would potentially be something that would benefit an investor. Or with venture capitalists, you have them come in and basically purchase a piece of it, or invest in it so that they own a majority stock in what you've created. And then the idea is that they have to then give that they could potentially sell off what it is that they own. And now somebody else owns you. So I think what it sounds like is they're trying to do is, for the most part, they're trying to avoid all of that just by having their investment in it being their own and maintaining the app as the Neptune app as their own as permanently as they can.
Yeah.
But I've seen some models of it, and granted, it's going to look a lot like the other social media apps that we have, whether it's the infinite scrolling like TikTok does, or your own profile page and things like that. So there are a lot of similarities in what is already out there, but it's the behind the scenes stuff, I think, that excites me the most with Neptune, because popularity won't be something that drives content to your view. It's not going to be something that is as important on the algorithm as your own personal choices on things, the things that you want to see. If when you initially do your setup, if you say, I really like country music, but not like mainstream country music, like, bluegrass country music. So maybe a lot of the content that gets driven to you will be more in line with that. So that's a terrible example, because I cannot imagine anyone ever being out there and going, you know what, I need more bluegrass.
I know a lot of people. I know a lot of people actually.
Yeah, you know, it's possible. So yeah. I do have a genuine fear, though, that if the United States makes some sort of investment into TikTok, like, what does TikTok then become? Because you have to imagine that the Trump way of handling everything is to basically make everything Trump-like, right? I mean,
yeah,
they moderate it.
Because it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's kind of like Twitter. I mean, it would be different from what happened with Twitter and X. Like, it's a very different situation. But I feel like it would just be abandoned. Also, or maybe also they just try to get more private investors investing into it. So that's not like government media, because I don't know. It's going to be very strange to see what happens to it. But
well, unlike True Social, TikTok comes with an immediate 70-something million users and millions of small businesses attached to it. Like right off the bat, you have basically just an onslaught of visibility like Facebook and whatnot, where True Social, I think, has, I want to say, I think like the statistic I saw on True Social recently was that they have something like 30,000 daily users that actually use the app pretty consistently, or that 30,000 unique individuals.
That's actually not very a lot unique. I would have thought
it's
more.
No, it's terrible. They may have a bunch of users, but for the most part, it doesn't see a lot of traffic because there's not a whole lot of content on it. Like, nobody's going on True Social to express their artism or to go on and talk about, you know, their feelings, as far as, unless they are directly related to their love of, you know, certain orange fruit shaped presidents.
Which the interesting thing about there is something interesting about Mastodon or about Truth Social is that it's actually an instance of Mastodon that they like copied and pasted it. And then that's also why it was easy to hack it in the beginning. Like, I think someone ripped everything down immediately and put a picture of a pig or something up there. I can't remember the exact thing, but I remember that happened. But it was just because it was running off an old update of Mastodon, which, in that case, if you wanted to start a Republican thread or a far right thread, you can do that if you want, because I think I'm using it correctly. I'm not sure, but it's like the federation of it is you can literally do whatever you want and start your own thing, be the ruler of whatever forum you start. Well,
Bill Kimmler, the host of Black, White, and Blue in the South, he has mentioned Mastodon many times. I still have never even pulled it up. I've never looked at it.
I got an account,
he seems to have some loyalty to it. He can, if he's still watching, he can certainly throw something in there. I think ultimately one of my biggest fears about the United States government having any sort of investment into TikTok is, you know, what does a state-run social media platform become? I mean, we kind of see it with True Social, but like I said, TikTok has 73 million users.
I can't think of anything that is like that. I mean, Red Note, which is China's thing, but that's a completely different thing. I'd be shocked if there was something like that. But I mean, who knows? It could happen. Given a month, anything could happen.
There is in all likelihood. You know, well, I mean, we have state-run TV media. I mean, we've got Fox News. Yeah. Well, okay. I was going a little.
Well, you were going with it. I mean, it's screw that. That's state-run. It's the government has a hand in it. And that's a big question for journalists, is should we be okay with there being a state-funded media at all?
Well, let me ask you about that, because I know that's one of the things that Trump's administration is trying to do, is they want to bring an end to national public radio, public television. They want to end that because their feeling on it is that NPR and state run, or, you know, national public television, public radio, those sorts of things, or those channels, that they are left leaning. Mm-hmm. And I've never worked for like SCE TV here in South Carolina. I've never worked for NPR. I've listened to NPR plenty. Mm-hmm. And I've always recognized, in my opinion, that those media sources, in my opinion, have always been pretty much just reporting facts or reporting the news. I didn't feel like there was a huge slant. I mean, you know, you do have Terry Gross, who does a program, or used to do a program. She may still do a program.
Yeah.
But I always felt like, you know, they were just reporting what the, you know, directly from the source. They weren't putting a left or right slant on things. But even talking to people like my father-in-law, who ultimately believes that NPR is just socialist radio, which is a weird thing
to
say.
Wild, but sure. Because by
definition, it is socialist radio, because it's literally radio that's being paid for by grants from the federal government, as well as donations from viewers like you and me. I understand that, but again, it never really gave a slant on what it was that was discussed. Like, if they reported news that made, you know, George W. Bush sound like a war hawk, then it's probably because George W. Bush was a bit of a war hawk.
Yeah, I don't know. So I kind of have had a lot of grave feelings on a lot of stuff when it comes to like government-run media, because I'm not against it at all. Also, if the government-run media wants to hire me, I don't want to call it a slant. Right. But because I would want to represent work for the government. But at the same time, it is like, how controlled is it? Because this, especially with bias, I mean, bias is in everything, and it's hard for any media to not have some bias. Personally, I think it's fine for the time being. I mean, I'm going to normally listen and read stuff from like AP or CNN, just because I like a more centered thing. That's also why I like Ground News. Ground News is like just a really nice way to see how things lean. But for the most part, like I'm not against it, but I would be interesting to hear what some of my professors who have doctorates in broadcast journalism would say about it.
You mentioned the AP, and I was going to ask you about that. The AP was banned from Oval Office press junkets. I can't call them like press conferences, and they're almost pressers, but like it's always Donald Trump sitting behind the desk. And ultimately, I think that's because at the age of 78, that his legs have begun to give out from the immense whale weight that he carries. And I say that completely acknowledging my own whale weight, whatever. But, you know, so he has these things. Well, he banned the AP because in their reporting, because of the fact, and this is my opinion, I don't know this for a fact, but the AP is used by news sources, or I guess news resources, like local television, newspapers. The AP is used around the world.
Yeah.
AP outside of the United States.
Default set. Like, if you want to get your news, you get that, and then you can take from it and write about it and say, this is the report.
Yeah.
Everything. Fox News uses it. CNN uses it. OAN will use it.
Yeah.
The Young Turks probably uses it. I mean, it's such a big deal for sure.
Yeah. But because the AP reports on news around the world, and they report on news in the United States around the world, there's what are we at? 8.6 billion people on the planet, and the United States makes up 300 million of that. So 8.2 or 8.3 billion people around the planet that would potentially read the AP news, they still report the name outside of the United States as the Gulf of Mexico. And that's because the only place on the planet that recognizes it as being the Gulf of America now is the United States. So it seems natural to me that the Gulf of America would only be stated in AP News when it's specifically about the Gulf in reporting that is, you know, that the content's being refreshed in the United States. Outside the United States, refer to it by the Gulf of Mexico because that's what everybody else refers to it as.
Yeah.
But because of that, the White House made the decision that they were going to ban the AP from these Oval Office little press junkets. They still have front and center in the press room, but
yeah,
it seems so menial I keep coming back to one of the things that I kept being said, or what kept being said to me when Trump was in office the first time, was I kept being referred to as a snowflake because I made observations about Donald Trump. And it was constantly, Barrett's a snowflake. He's not coping with the fact that Hillary lost. He's a snowflake. And it's like, for something as trivial as how one particular news source has the name listed, it seems so snowflakish for the White House to be upset that the AP is referring to the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of Mexico instead of the Gulf of America outside of the United States. Like, why do they care what the reporting is outside of the United States? Like, what difference does it make?
Yeah. He just does it to assert dominance. Like, he literally just to make people upset. But it truly is like, there's going to be information that AP normally would write about that CNN and Fox and every media source would typically pull from. It's pretty close to censorship. I'm going to be perfectly honest. I'm not aware of the laws or if there's any rules that are set around that to where it's perfectly okay to be barred from anything. But I feel like he would have done that with other medias already.
CNN is in those pressers because I hear Caitlin Collins asking questions. Like,
yeah,
she's the White House staff reporter for CNN. She's in the White House, you know, I hear her asking questions every single time. It's funny you mentioned Donald Trump establishing his dominance again at the age of 78 years old. Like, I just want to keep reminding people, this is not a young man. He does not have the vitality that he had when he was, you know, 40 or 60. Like, he's almost 80 years old. And the fact that people keep looking at him as being like this bigger than life, whatever, he's 78 years old. And, you know, ignoring the age of my parents, 78 is old. It's not young. And the people that keep acting like this, that he has some magic powers. I don't know. Bill Kimmler said he thinks he's just going to live forever, but like out of fear, I think. But today, you know, you mentioned establishing dominance. He posted on his Truth Social at about 2:00 Eastern time. He said, congestion pricing is dead. Manhattan and all of New York is saved. Long live the king.
That's scary.
He referred to himself as the king.
Well,
he referred to himself as the king. And then to follow up on that, in all of the White House social media, they posted what was a created article or a front page of a magazine with Trump wearing a king, and underneath said long live, or on the news, on the page, it actually said long live the king.
I don't know how we're here. I really don't. Like, it's just, well, the other day he did the stuff where he was, what did he say? What did he say? He said something like, he who is in power must control the law or something like
determines,
that.
Determines, basically, yeah, paraphrasing, basically, he who is in power determines, basically gets to make determinations on the law.
Yeah.
Is ultimately what he was saying. And part of the problem is that J.D. Vance, who is a friggin' Yale graduate, right? Yale? He went to Yale Law School.
Yale, like,
he perpetuated with that the courts shouldn't be, and again, paraphrasing, but the courts shouldn't be participating in any actions or whatever that make the executive branch look weak. And it's like, what are we talking about? How are we here?
It is wild. But it's also funny because a lot of the things have been very authoritarian. And he's said the things that I've seen, just anybody can look at it and just be like, oh, these are clear. Like, he wants to be king. He wants to be a monarch. The only thing that is holding them back from doing that are some of the checks and balances. I was having a debate the other night about whether or not we're in a constitutional crisis. And just the further we go, it feels like our checks and balances are being tested in ways that were never before thought about. And now that the court is completely right-leaning, I mean, just very openly right-leaning, I don't know where we're at. Like, we're pretty close to it, even like 2 months in. Not even, it's been like 6 weeks.
It hasn't been 6 weeks. Today's February 19th. He was sworn into office on the 20th.
It's been 1 month.
It's not been a month.
It'll be one month tomorrow.
And it does. It feels like we've been in this never ending, just rampage of nonsense for, it feels like it's been 6 months, but because, and one of the things I go back to is that back in during Trump's first term, one of the things that Bannon, that was an advisor to President Trump during his first term, that Steve Bannon basically gave away some of the playbook when he told a reporter that what we have to do in this administration is basically just flood the market. That's not what he used. But essentially just every day hit the press with as much as you can every single day so that some of the other stuff doesn't get seen. Some of the other stuff just sort of skirts past. And essentially they didn't do it that well during Trump's first term because incompetence, I guess, or maybe it was because there were a few adults in the room that prevented, there being as much damage being caused. But you know, he had hired legitimate statesmen as far as, being able to, you know, when it came to like his cabinet, there were a few people in his cabinet that were, you know, at least constitutionally minded. And now we have zero of that. We have a defense secretary in, Pete Hedgepath or whatever his name is, that literally told the European community in Germany that there is no, you know, that the likelihood of Ukraine getting back to pre-2014 territory borders between them and Russia was not going to happen. You know, that it was extremely unlikely. And it's like, and then he said that their being accepted into NATO was extremely unlikely.
Which, I still don't know where we're at with NATO, because from my understanding, Trump said multiple times over the past 2 years that he wants to completely pull out of NATO. I mean, like...
Well, don't put it in the universe. Then he's going to remember he said it.
I remember. So, I mean... I don't know where we're moving. It's very also like it feels like we're just trying to invade other stuff. They're trying to take Panama. They want to do something with Canada. Those things, if it happened, it's going to cause so many wars. I don't know how it actually would not be just bluffs, but it's possible. I mean, also the red, white, and blue land thing. Like,
oh God,
I thought that was an Onion post when I read it. I could not believe it.
Oh, the Onion could not have written it any better.
Yeah.
The fact that there is a Republican Congress representative from Savannah, Georgia, whom has put forth a bill to potentially have Greenland. Well, it allows for Trump to negotiate with Denmark about the potential absorption of Greenland into the United States, or the purchasing of Greenland. But at the finish of the acquisition of Greenland, that there would be a bill that would then rename Greenland to Red, White, and Blueland. And as ridiculous as that sounds, which, you know, it being named Greenland is sort of ridiculous in a sense anyway, because it's not, I mean, you know, it's covered in ice.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for a little while longer. That will come to an end. We will not have ice on Greenland at some point in the next, I don't know, 100 years.
Yeah.
It's going to come pretty close, but yeah. And then, you know, you look at the other things like these tariffs that are being enacted on Canada, or that he wants to enact on Canada, because he thinks that there's, and there is a deficit as far as what is being shipped into Canada versus what is being shipped out of Canada in the United States. So we do have, there's a difference in the imports and exports. We definitely import a lot from Canada, whether yep. it's oil or lumber, pharmaceuticals. We get, you know, the pharmaceutical companies here in the United States, they bring in a lot of their product from Canada. Like, it comes in through Canada. A lot of stuff comes through Canada.
Yeah. In my opinion, it's not a bad idea ever to strengthen relations to the point of with other countries. Like, I would love to see a North American Union. That's an interesting concept to me, but absorbing a country based out of force and taking it as our own state, that's the scary thing to me. But
yeah,
I don't know that North American, a North American Union would even be controversial in itself, but also it'd be interesting to see how we could deal with labor. If we had a stronger union with Canada and Mexico, how would we deal with labor? How would we deal with immigration like they do in the EU?
Well, we had NAFTA for decades. Like, the North American Free Trade Agreement was in place, and it wasn't a super great thing when it came to some jobs here in the United States. I will fully admit that it definitely did hurt Mexico,
for sure.
Yeah, that too. So it wasn't really great. But then the USCM, what is it? The USCAM, the USCAM is the United States Canada Mexico Trade Agreement that was under Trump's first term. Mm-hmm. Also, basically, you know, for the most part, it was a carbon copy of NAFTA. It just had a different name to it. And yeah. it didn't really strengthen the economy for any of the countries. Maybe Canada a little bit. They benefited some from it, but it didn't really make a whole lot of changes. But the idea that tariffs are the way to go against your two closest allies on the planet is asinine to me, because tariffs don't do anything but raise prices for us, the consumers. If Canada pulls and attaches tariffs to things that they get from the United States, it's really just going to affect their consumers. Like, it's one of those weird trade wars between countries that don't really affect the country's governments. It only affects the people of those countries. And that's what tariffs do. We pay for those tariffs.
Yeah. Well, and we would, for sure. And to an extent, like, China would feel that, which is also kind of why we had a weird, it's kind of like Cuba. Cuba was the same thing. The tariffs are so strong. I mean, the people suffered from not having us as traders, and also we as well. I mean, it just hurts both parties.
And we put an embargo on them. So basically canceling out any of our allies from being able to really trade with Cuba.
Yeah. And I think that was, I can't remember. Was it Obama that lifted it? I think Biden put it back in.
Obama lifted it. Trump put it back in. It wasn't that we had free trade with Cuba, but we Obama did open Cuba up to tourism travel, and there were some sanctions that were lifted against Cuba because, you know, it's been 50 years, 60 years. And ultimately, what are those sanctions really doing to a country that doesn't have an attachment to as the Soviet Union anymore? Cause it doesn't exist. Really, it was just us kind of putting our thumb on them, trying to convince them that democracy is the way to go. But, you know, if Cuba's watching right now, look, this is what democracy gets you. you get the dumbest timeline with this current democracy.
I even hear like why the tariffs were implemented. It's just like the whole thing with him is he's wanting it to be more everything manufactured and collected from American resources to be used, which is just
right.
That's it's like sometimes there's like things where it's halfway there. If we still had the open trade, we can manufacture all the things here as long as we deal with the imports, and we can say it's made in America. We can fully put together cars in America if we can have free imports from Germany and China and all these other places. It's just impossible. And sustainability is impossible. Like all of these issues, there's no way you can build all those things here and not sell them to just the ultra rich only. Like cars right. would immediately soar. It's just not. It's like halfway there, and then this just demolish every. It just goes everything reasonable goes out the window.
As much as people want to deny that we are the United States is just a fraction of the population of the planet. Like that to me is one of the things that I am still dumbfounded by how little people that are so closed-minded that don't use any critical thinking. They do not recognize that the United States is a mere fraction of what goes on this planet. Again, 60 million people, 330 million people, something like that make up the United States. Yeah. The world population is like 8.6 billion or more. Yeah. And it's like the idea that you ignore the most obvious that the United States isn't the majority. We may spend more on our defense than the next 8 countries combined is not an indication of just how strong the United States is. Militarily, I get that we have a military that could basically obliterate anyone else on the planet, but it's insane to me that people don't recognize that we are such a small part of this giant planet and the fact that we could have such, you know, I go back to Star Trek, that utopian sort of, you know, ignoring all of the military buildup by Section 33 of the Starfleet. You ignore that part, and it's a utopian society where people basically live to better society. And as much as people out there want to argue that they think that's a terrible idea and we shouldn't do that sort of thing, I have to always go back to, but wouldn't it be better if we worked in partnership, if we could figure out a way to work in partnership with everybody to make things better, like improve lives. Yeah. Ultimately, that's the role of the government is our federal government should be working to make our lives better. And under this current administration, working for us.
That's the whole point. Which it's just funny that there's a lot of people that are just like, well, you could say it like that, and on paper it sounds great, but it just can't be done. And then I'm like, the thing we're doing right now doesn't even sound good on paper. Like,
no,
it just, what are we doing? Like, we just can't, we can't do this.
What we have right now is basically just a scorched earth way of trying to handle the government. And in part of that, I'll bring this part up and we'll probably wrap up here in just a little bit to this. But my mother sent me an email with the timeline of all these plane incidents.
Yeah, there was another one that wasn't there.
But there was definitely one yesterday. On the 17th.
Where was that one? because I think there was one Canada. In Arizona.
Today. Was there one in Arizona recently? Today? Oh, my gosh. Hey, okay, so
fact check me on that, because I don't want to be spread misinformation.
As of yesterday, there have been 4 deadly plane crashes in the United States in 2025. In total, 85 people have died. There has not been, now prior to January 29th, there had not been a deadly incident involving a U.S. airliner since 2009. So you're talking 15 years that there had not been, nearly 15 years, there had not been an incident in the United States. So January 29th, we saw the American Airlines flight collide with a Black Hawk helicopter over the Potomac River, which then killed 64 people on the plane, as well as the 3 in the helicopter. 2 days later, a medical jet flying out of Philadelphia killed 7 people, including a young patient who had just basically been given her life back to her after treatment. 7 people were on board there, and then 24 people injured on the ground. And then, 7 days later, a Grand Caravan Cessna operating, out of the, I guess flying into Nome, Alaska, crashed into the Bering Sea. 10 people died on that one. 13th, there was a plane that, went off the end of the runway, at Buckeye Municipal Airport in Arizona. That was, that 3 people were on board. FAA is still investigating. There was a crash at the Covington Municipal Airport in Georgia around 11:40 p.m. on the 15th of February. 2 people on board that one. The FAA and NTSB are currently investigating that. The next day, there was a Cessna that crashed near Pearland Regional Airport in Texas around 10:45 p.m. on Sunday, February 16th. Only the pilot was on board. The FAA is investigating that one. And then on the 17th, Delta Airlines flight operating by Endeavor Air crashed while landing in the Toronto Pearson International Airport. And if you've watched the video of that, that is quite the spectacle.
That was crazy. Did you see the dude climb out of it with the video? I could not imagine being in that situation. It was wild to see.
The plane rolled over in flames.
Yeah.
And all 80 people got off. That to me is the... that to me is the most amazing part. But the fact that this plane trying to do one of these crab maneuvers is essentially what was going on, because there were 40-mile-an-hour winds with higher wind gusts, and the plane couldn't come in straight. So what they do is this crab maneuver where they basically they're flying into the headwind and just trying to edge themselves over the runway to the point where they finally just right before they come down, they yank to the right or whatever, so that they can then make the landing. Well, they did it pretty successfully up to the point where the plane then started to make that turn to try and put itself onto the ground, and the wind caught it and basically just pushed it over on top of itself, and 80 people walked away. But I think this is the endemic of having so many people being fired from jobs. These are career civil servants that have been in these jobs for, in some cases, decades, especially when it comes to air travel. Like, literally, the people that are guiding planes in via radar at working the towers in all of these airports across the hundreds of airports across the country. And the idea that they may potentially not have their job anymore, that Elon Musk is going to come in from SpaceX with some brand new software that's going to make everything super great, even though SpaceX doesn't work on software. That's not their thing. They put rockets in the air, and they only really do it 60% of the time are they successful. Like, Elon Musk is notorious for SpaceX blowing planes up and then him tweeting out, well, that was exciting. And it's like, you just blew up a $15 billion rocket, and that's exciting. It's insane.
It's like, what could we have done with that money to help people? Like, $15 billion, that's enough to help South Carolina out and raise teacher salary immediately. Just immediately. Oh, and it's like, well, we blew that up.
$15 billion would take care of salaries for teachers for probably the next, I don't know, 50 years, and would reinvest into their pension program for teachers for the next 100 years. Like $15 billion in just South Carolina education. Unless, of course, you know, it's the Republicans are just going to give it all away to voucher programs and things like that. But, you know, aside from that, yeah, $15 billion would be an unbelievable investment into education for one state that would have lasting results for into the next century. Because $15 billion is a lot of money, and South Carolina doesn't spend that much money on education. That's just insane.
Yeah, no, it's disgusting. It just really is. Yeah. I just don't understand how we're at a point where that kind of money that just goes into something like that. Because I'm also like, space travel, but you can do it without that. I don't know.
I'm all in favor of us sending Elon Musk to Mars. I have zero issue with that because I think we all benefit from that because there's no return flight on that one. I don't care what they say. The belief that we can have a sustained life on a round trip from Mars. You have read too many science fiction books, and none of the science fictions or none of the actual science papers on exactly what it takes to get us to and from Mars, because Elon Musk ain't coming back from that one. I don't care how many roadsters he puts in that rocket with him.
Well, even developing a whole atmosphere, a livable place on another planet, yeah. I'm like, we have a planet right now that if you're saying that you know how to fix that on Mars, you should be able to fix it here. You should be able to do that, 100%. But we can't. I don't understand. I don't understand where people are getting this from, and then they're just like, "Oh yeah, I'm on board with that all the way."
I don't know. I have no intelligent answers for this.
I'm like, I need experts.
I am waiting for Elon Musk to investigate himself and the federal contracts that have quite literally made him $300 billion. He has made $300 billion at the teat of the American government. Where's the audit on that? That's what I want to know. When is that going to happen? Real quick though. Do you want to talk to, you want to talk to RFK Jr.?
I met him one time.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, then maybe he'll remember you. Bobby Jr. is on the phone with us. How's it going, Bobby? I'm gonna try and play this like it's working.
Oh my God.
It's RFK Jr. Now he's a little hard to understand. So, I guess. I can't understand a single thing he's saying, but maybe we can just get like inflection or something like that. But Bobby Jr., are you excited about being the Secretary of Health and Human Services? Is that a good? Interesting. I still don't understand a word he's saying. It's really hard, but are you going to actually make a lot of changes when it comes to vaccines and things like that that are available through, you know, a lot of the programs with the United States as it is now? Yeah, I don't understand what he's saying. Interesting. I think Bobby, we're probably just going to have to let you go on this one. We'll try and connect with you again, but you got something in your throat. Sure. I, again, don't understand a single thing you're saying, but, thanks for stopping by.
That is going to be
a running gag. We are going to have RFK on, we are going to have RFK Jr. on our show all the time now. We're going to have to make a lot of assumptions about what it is he's saying, but I'm sure it's interesting.
Yeah. Last time I spoke with him, he really went back on a lot of the things that he told me. It was,
I don't doubt that.
He came here to Columbia while he was running for president, And every single thing I like recorded him on camera, spoke with him, had all these things. And then almost everything that he said to Congress is the exact opposite of what he told me. It is,
of course,
very, very weird to see that in real time.
Yeah. I got to interview Marianne Williamson when she was running for president. That.
Yeah.
RFK was not one that I could get on the show. Like, I reached out to him. I reached out to Biden's, campaign and tried to get Biden to come on. I reached out to Trump's campaign to try to get on. But apparently you have to be a Theo Vaughn or Joe Rogan or whatever in order to get Donald Trump on, which is fine. Whatever. Yeah. I don't care. My feelings aren't hurt. Ultimately RFK is the forgotten son of the Kennedy family. Like, he's mostly alienated himself out of their graces. And the result is now he's the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And when he was asked, are you going to go to work for a medical company or potentially a pharmaceutical after you are no longer in this seat, which ultimately I think it's fair to ask, are you going to turn this job into a job that then creates you a mass amount of money being the face of Pfizer or something like that? It's fair to ask that question. Couldn't say no. He couldn't say yes. He couldn't say no. And ultimately it wouldn't have turned out any differently, but just, be honest, tell us, I'm using this to, get me back into the money that the Kennedys have. Kennedys, Carlyles, whatever. Just insane. Wow. Isn't it the Carlyle? It's the Kennedys, the Carlyles.
Carlyle Kennedy. Lexington put myself on the spot. I was trying to think of who it was, the Republican woman. I'm forgetting.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody in the comments over here said, Blake Hungerford said that Theo Vaughn is not funny. Totally agree. Theo Vaughn is trash as far as I'm concerned. That may not be everyone's opinion.
I'll tell you,
I don't find him funny.
I did watch him live. He was it was an interesting set.
I know. Yeah. I was going to say, I know people that watch him live, but he's not really a professional comedian. I don't actually know what it is that he did to get famous unless it was just the internet. I assume he just made his fame on the internet.
He was on a lot of little shows and stuff for a while, but
He was the weakest part of the Johnny Knoxville movie that came out last year about him being in a rehab softball team. Theo Vaughn was the weakest part of that entire movie. And ultimately I've seen his stand up.
Yeah.
I don't know who writes for him, but they have to be disappointed in how he carries out their jokes. That's all I'll say. There's a timing issue. Well, Bill, I really appreciate it. I know you said you've got to get out of here for stuff that you've got to do. I just real quick want to wrap it up. The Coastal Comic Con is coming up March 1st and 2nd. Zach and I are going to be there. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have to get as many people as we can to come and visit with us. We're going to be doing some lives while we're there at the Coastal Comic Con. Again, Wilmington Convention Center in Wilmington, North Carolina. Go ahead and get tickets, coastalcomiccon.com. Check out ZJZ Designs. Their winner, their St. Patrick's Day t-shirts are available. Go check them out. Buy those because they go to a good cause, which is the elderly. and lastly, if you're watching us live right now, Everplay, Source, and Social, sign up for spring sports ends today. So if you're watching this any day after February the 19th, it's too late. Sorry. But if you do sign up today, there's dodgeball, softball, bowling, multiple nights of kickball, soccer, volleyball, and cornhole. So go do that. Everplaysocial.com and ZJZdesign.com. So go check those out. All right, Bill, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Barrett.
And I look forward to many more of these. I guess I'll just wrap it up. Links to past episodes, podcast platforms, social media, merchandise, and more available at our website, theallaboutnothing.com. It's going to do it for episode number 243. If you think our financial model of giving away free content and entertainment is silly and you're in the giving mood, why not become an official Nothinger and support the show monthly? Members get early access to this episode as well as exclusive content. Visit theallaboutnothing.com and click on the support link near the top of the page. You can subscribe monthly at a varying level of membership tiers or click on the tips link and give us a one-time donation. If you'd like to be a part of the conversation, you can call and leave us a message, or you can send us an email. Phone number is 803-672-0533. The email address is theshow@theallaboutnothing.com, or you can join our Discord server. Again, links to all of that are at the top of our webpage. Bill, again, thank you very much for being here. Everybody, thank you very much for listening. You all stay safe, be kind, and keep your hands to yourself. The All About Nothing podcast is a product of Big Media and produced and engineered by me, Barrett Gruber. Thanks to Cake for our intro music, Sick of You. You can follow everything Cake the band at cakemusic.com. Thanks to Muff the producer for our outro music. You can follow Muff on Instagram at Muff the producer. I am Barrett Gruber. You can follow me across social media by visiting linktree.com/Barrett Gruber. You can follow Zach King on social media at GarnetKing07. Want to support the show? Visit our webpage at theallaboutnothing.com and become a member. There are several tiers available that give you early access to episodes as well as exclusive content. To find links to our social media, podcast platforms, and merchandise to support the show as well as past episodes, visit theallaboutnothing.com. If you'd like, you can be a part of the show. Email theshow@theallaboutnothing.com, or you can call our number and leave a message. Dial 803-672-0533. If the time between these episodes is more than you can handle, check out our sister shows, including What the Pod Was That with Carrie, Zach, and myself, Welcome to Wonderland with a Me, and Black, White, and Blue in the South with Dr. Jameel Brooks and Bill Kimmler. Please subscribe and share this show. If you're on YouTube, please hit the subscription button and punch that notification bell. Thank you for listening, and hear us next week. The preceding podcast is a product of Big Media, LLC, and is copyright 2025, all rights reserved.